Welcome, Chrononauts, as we guide you through the experience of time travel. Oh my gosh, I don't have a thing.
He doesn't have a thing.
I don't have a thing.
Of course you got a thing.
Do we get to help you think of a thing?
You do. You do. I totally.
Can the thing be
the key?
I was going to say either.
But
the key.
what's the crazy key called?
The influctuation, factoration.
I wrote some stuff down. Oh no!
The name. You wrote it down.
We're not prepared. Juxtaposition. No. That's not it.
The vaporizing
equalizer key.
There it is. Welcome, Chrononauts, as we guide you through the experience of time travel using pop culture as our
vaporizing equalizer.
That was always first one. That was great.
Wow.
We will be your constants.
I am Dez.
I'm Ari.
And I'm Scott.
And this is
Time Pop.
We are God.
That was kind of fun.
Pop, 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 pop.
That was really interactive.
That was beautiful.
We just changed the time space continuum just now.
Scott, did I just improv?
Yeah,
that wasn't. We just changed it on the spot, and we yes-ended each other. This is a totally different podcast now.
Yes-ended.
Yeah, we yes-ended.
Speaking of improv, can I get an idea from the audience? Yes, Henry from Australia would like us to talk about Time After Time.
Yeah, man, Henry, you knew about it. Like, I was hesitant for this movie, but Henry knew.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I liked this.
Oh, you did? Great.
Today, in the present, we will be discussing Time After Time from the past. You will listen to it in the future, which is now.
Hello?
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 If you can hear this, it's not too late. I return to warn you. This is Time Pop, a podcast that discusses time travel and pop culture. There are spoilers. I've seen the future, and nothing is sacred to these folks. Your past, present, and future are sure to be ruined. Even if you could go back in time, as I have, you will never forget what you are about to hear. You've been warned. This is Time Pop.
This is the first time I'm, like, shocked that you like it, Ari. Like, usually yeah, I'm like, I'm not too sure how Ari's gonna feel about it.
Because it's a love story.
That's not the only reason. That's not the only reason. Excuse me.
Is it because of the amazing science involved?
There's lots of reasons, and we'll get to all of them. Thank you very much.
Are there four reasons that sound like L-O-V-E?
What? No, I enjoyed this movie very much. I didn't think I would. I was hesitant. But there was a lot I really liked about this movie. I mean, one being, you know, getting to see San Francisco in the 70s. Yeah. So, you know, for all our listeners out there, we are based in the Bay Area, just outside of San Francisco. We all know the city of San Francisco very well. So it was really fun to see all these areas, which we've been to many times, featured in this movie. So that was one of the reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fun.
It was fascinating to see what doesn't change, you know? Like, there's the above those buildings, like the one market center. Like, there's all those tiled floors that are exactly the same as they were in 1979, where, like, the punchline is, and all the shopping centers.
I had no idea San Francisco had a revolving restaurant.
Yeah.
It was probably top of the mark, right?
I think it's Regency. I think it's in the Hyatt Regency, which they don't mention in the movie. Like, in the movie, they go to the Hyatt Regency, but then I think they don't mention that that's where the restaurant is to pretend like they're actually, like, going out on the town and not filming in the same but yeah, I think it's still there because, like, I lived in Seattle forever, and they have the Space Needle, which is, like, that's what the Space Needle is all about, is the revolve. So I always thought that was just super unique to the Space Needle, but I'm gonna go.
Oh no, they have those everywhere. They got it in Toronto also.
Toronto.
You're not the only one to have a rotating restaurant.
I know.
I've been in a few, like, throughout my life in different places.
You don't need a needle of space in order to rotate while you eat.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of eating, Scott, holy shit. So you were saying that you thought, oh my God, I'm so excited.
At McDonald's?
No.
Oh.
The Dark Russets. You were saying that you saw them because I remember.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the Cape Cod Dark Russets,
what's
which are
dark
amazing.
Russet?
It's a kind of potato chip, a dark potato chip from the East Coast. This has nothing to do with the film.
Oh.
But you said you thought you had seen them, and now yeah. I know where, because I got a bag at Trader Joe's today.
It was a Trader Joe.
Trader Joe's Dark Russets.
Oh. This episode of Time Pop is sponsored by Dark Russets.
Just the bag of potato chips.
Just one bag of chips. Yeah, it's fine. It was a good movie. It was very amusing. Slow, like 70s films, right? But it's fun to see, yeah, San Francisco in the 70s. It's fun to see the person out of place and time. Someone who's like 100 years out of their time. And like, he acted pretty cool with it when like, you know, most people would be pretty amazed at every single thing you walk by.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when he, yeah, the utopia he thought he was going to.
I like the fact that this was kind of historical fiction based on H.G. Wells. I really like H.G. Wells. I like, you know, the time machine. I haven't read the book, but I liked the movie. And it was based off of him and kind of maybe how he met his wife. Like, that's fun. Historical fiction can be fun. So that was another reason why I liked it.
Fiction can be fun. So real quick, Time After Time from 1979, rated PG, 1 hour and 52 minutes, directed by Nicholas Meyer, starring Malcolm McDowell, Mary Steenburgen, and David Warner. This movie was, well, in Ari, I mean, technically, well, maybe not technically, fictionally, they went into the future, so that's good.
And they go into the future. Another reason why I liked it.
Yeah, that never happens. Although funny that it's a film that goes in the future, but for us now, that's the past. So it's like less exciting in that way.
I told Ari about this, but yesterday I went to the movie theater and I saw the movie, the horror movie X.
Okay.
And it's about people from 1979. So it was really weird. In like less than a week, I saw
right
Time After Time going to 1979 and then X going back 40 years to tell their story. So that was just an interesting thing in my life.
It's all coming together.
79, baby.
Yeah, the concept of going to the future is something I always love. And I felt like they did a pretty good job of him kind of discovering the future and what it's all about and all the different, you know, machines and things and styles. And, you know, that would be such a fun concept to me, to like,
yeah,
be able to go to the future and just discover what it's about and how, and see how different it is.
Currency and social mores.
Styles. And machines.
Yeah, he was pretty taken with that woman he saw walking across the street when he first got there.
Yeah, I know. I kept waiting for her to come back. He almost got hit by a car for her.
Uh-huh. And yeah, she goes on this rant, but then she kind of suggests that like, well, like, was she about to say that she kind of gets a woman too? And then she talks about what gets her hot and most people don't. And then she's talking about her friend. It's like this rant that doesn't make any sense about like what she does to get off every few months. I mean, they're trying to, she's supposed to be a modern woman and kind of show, you know, him getting to see that.
Yeah. And he's been a feminist since way back, baby.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things about H.G. Wells is he was, you know, he was a futurist. And so he predicted all these things. It was interesting, though, how in the beginning of the movie, he's kind of arguing with the Jack the Ripper guy about, no, in the future, it's going to be a utopia. And there's going to be socialism. And Jack the Ripper's like, no way. It's going to be bad and evil, yeah, and whatever he said. And
did he say it's actually going to be evil, or did they just not want to listen to his socialist?
He said he was wrong. I mean, he said that he disagreed with him and
yeah,
what the future would be like.
And they were not happy to find out that women may be of equals in the future.
Yes. Yeah.
So did you?
Very nice. All right. Well, since you guys just watched it, you want to take it from the top?
Dive right in.
Should be pretty easy.
Or, I mean, yeah, totally. It shouldn't. And we'll like I said, we'll get into it and then we'll start our tangents once we get into the time travel of the movie.
I don't know much about the actual, you know, history of Jack the Ripper. I know that he was a real person who was killing prostitutes in England back in the 1800s of some time. Was it the late 1800s?
I don't know. That's what
it was. The movie took place in 1893.
But and yeah, I don't know how historically accurate.
Like he wasn't just like a story someone wrote and then it kind of became a thing. He was actually a person, right? That was killing women and he was never caught.
What date did this 1897?
1893.
Okay. It says that because I think at the beginning too, they say something about he hasn't struck for a couple years. And it says here that his rant went from 88 to 91. And so him kind of coming back out of the shadows in 93.
Okay.
To get a couple more
was a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they talked about it in the movie. Exactly.
So I liked that they kind of let you know right away who Jack the Ripper was, right? He was this doctor friend of H.G. Wells. And
Oh, great filmmaking. The rip when he kills, like when he kills the woman, you don't hear any stabbings or any slicing. You just hear just fabric ripping for a good 8 seconds.
That's so funny. I turned to her. I was like, what the hell is that sound effect? It sounds like just tearing Velcro apart.
Yeah.
The blood's spreading out. Like, this is, yeah.
He's not Jack the Slicer. He's not Stabby McStaberson.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah.
the Ripper.
Thank God for Hollywood sound effects. That's how stabbing always sounds.
As a sound guy.
You yeah. liked it. So H.G. Wells is having a dinner party with all his hoity-toity man friends.
Ew, I think that's off of her.
In England, and when his final friend, Mr. John Stevenson.
Yes.
Yes.
Stevenson.
Well, first we see Steven. Sorry, I don't know if we were explicit enough. We see someone die. We see someone get killed. We don't see who does the killing. And then John Stevenson shows up to the party.
Right. He's late to the party. He's a surgeon. And then H.G. Wells proceeds to tell his friends that he's built a time machine. And here's the schematics. And here it is. I'm going to show it to you. And this is how it works. And this is the key. And this is the sparkly diamond key called the vaporizing equalizer. And just like every other time travel movie, I believe at this point it is now become a law, a rule. The law is you have to explain the science of your travel very quickly and as scientifically confusing as you possibly can. So I had to rewind this a couple of times, but the science of this time machine, of H.G. Wells' time machine, is it's powered by the sun. The heat is turned into electricity, and it's got a juxtaposing fields of energy creating friction, and then a bunch of reactions happen, and then it lifts and rotates the machine out of this time sphere into another time sphere, and it can travel 2 years per minute, either forward or backwards, and yeah.
And then, yeah. And they need the two different things, right? There's the key.
Oh, yeah. So there's the key that goes in the actual machine, which you need that in order to get back to where you're from.
So if the machine, basically, it's so that if the machine accidentally like turns on by itself, it'll all always right. so come if you back.
Use, yeah. If you use the time machine without the key, the time machine automatically goes back to where it left. Hmm. Right. And then if you remove the vaporizing equalizer key on the outside of the machine,
the person travels like in time without anything to ground them or take them anywhere.
Yeah. I didn't quite understand that because, we're jumping to the end. I'm assuming everybody has seen this movie.
Well, I didn't, because when I was rewatching it, because at the end I had forgotten, because I watched this movie in two chunks. FYI, so I watched this movie. So when I pressed play, Scott, I pressed play, and then 5 minutes later, we started the text chain about whether or not we were going to record on Sunday. And so by the time that text chain was done, I was a little ways into it. So then I just finished the hour, and then I was like, hey, I can't watch the whole thing. I'll have the end in my mind. So then yesterday, I watched the second hour. And then today, as usual, I threw it back on. So by the time I got to the end, I totally, like, I just figured he vaporized, like, because I do remember them saying vapor or something. So I assumed he was just gone. And then when I, or yeah, lost.
Well, he said he sent him to infinity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I missed that part too. In the beginning, there was a lot of, like I said, very fast science talk, which you have to do.
Yes.
But what it looked like was the guy, he just sat in the machine. It didn't even look like he turned the machine on. But then H.G. Wells pulled out the vaporizing key and he just disappeared.
Yeah.
So
he's going through space without anything to anchor him or take him.
So is he like in the phantom zone?
Yeah, he's just traveling through time without a vessel, without anywhere to go to.
So to continue the synopsis, and we don't have to go into much detail of it, but after he explains his machine to his friends, the cops show up to his house.
Scotland Yard.
The constable.
That means cops in England.
That's cops in English speak.
In English, yeah. So they say, we are suspecting this is the area where Jack the Ripper is hiding. Can we come in and look around? And as they're looking around, they find
a bag.
a doctor bag, and inside the doctor bag is a bloody lady glove. And they say, oh, that's this. It must be this guy's bag. And they say, he's, you know, where did he go? He's not around. And then.
And it takes him a long time to see if the time machine is there or not. Like, he goes and has tea with his
housekeeper
for like for a while. And then she says something vague and he goes, oh, and then finally runs down to check and see that it's. And is it gone?
Yeah, John had taken it. And as he's there, he sees it return back to the room.
Oh, he sees it come back. Okay.
Yeah. With some dazzling 1979 special effects.
Oh.
Reflective rainbows, some negative film.
Some real Pink Floyd shit.
Yeah, so minimally psychedelic.
Yeah.
So, right. So the machine comes back. It's empty. It's very hot if you touch it. And he sees on the little dashboard panel that it went to 1979, November 15th.
Why?
No. November 5th.
Oh, whatever the date was.
Is there any significance to the date?
15th or 5th?
November 5th, 1955.
You mean 79?
No. That's where they travel to. In Back to the Future.
Oh, they're doing Back to the Future to the same, I mean, different year, but they did the same date.
Yep.
That's kind of neat.
I think, because they would have been watching this, they would have been writing back, because Back to the Future was written, it took them a little while to get that from
paper. Yeah, I read, they used Mary Steenburgen, and that was like a conscious decision.
Yeah, I was wondering that too, if Steenburgen, so yeah, I think the November 5th thing comes from this movie too.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Different year, but same date.
Same date, November 5th.
1979,
and they did November 5th, 1955.
Yeah, and I think they're even on. I think they're going from November 5th to November. I think it's all November 5th. Like, I think Back to the Future 2, they go to November 5th, 2015.
But so there's no reason why he goes in the thing and why he picked, it's in 1893, why they picked 1979. There's no significance. It's just,
yeah.
You would think he would just do 100 years on the dot or something if he's just being random, but it's like just under.
Yeah.
It's pretty random.
I mean, what happened was the writers were like, I want to base this on Jack the Ripper. Jack the Ripper was around in this time, and I want to film this movie now. Yeah. And now is 1978.
And it's November.
Yeah.
Well, it must have had a little something to do, too, with when H.G. Wells wrote The Time Machine. I haven't figured out when he published that.
So the writer of this script was probably, you know, very well-versed in H.G. Wells's work, you know, of The Time Machine, basing The Time Machine off of the description in the book, because it was very similar to the movie.
Yeah.
The Time Machine. And they talk about spheres, and there were spheres in the book and in the movie about the Time Machine.
1895 is when the Time Machine book came out.
95?
1895, yeah.
Okay. So
2 years later, he came back and he wrote his book.
That's very cool. So the machine returns. He sees that on the panel it says November 5th, 1979. And he gathers up all the money in his house, all the jewels that he can, and he gets in the machine and he goes there. And I didn't time it, but I wonder if the like artsy psychedelic scene was the same length as it would have taken, because 2 years for every minute, that would have been too much.
Would have taken like 25 minutes.
Okay.
I think they were suggesting it took a while. I mean, he was sweating. It was like,
yeah, they definitely, yeah. So yeah, what is it? Go ahead and keep talking. I'm gonna do some math.
He goes through this psychedelic, you know, as best as computer graphics can do in 1978, trip through time into the future, and he materializes in a museum in San Francisco.
The H.G. Wells exhibit.
Yeah.
So does that make sense? Should we discuss that now?
Let's discuss that now.
Why not?
He even says earlier he's just going to travel in time in his laboratory.
Oh. Right. And in the time machine, that time machine only travels in time and not in space. Everything changes around the sphere.
No.
The machine stays where it is.
And oh, everything right.
Around
right.
it changes. So it's only traveling in time and not in space.
Even in this film, he suggests he's like, I'm just going to stay in my laboratory. I'm just going to go into the future.
Yeah. Which is really genius if you think about it. Like, for someone to know that when you time travel, you're only traveling in time and you're not traveling in space, for H.G. Wells to know that back then is pretty genius. Smart man.
And he mentioned something during the science, the fast-talking sciencey part. He basically explains, like, I'll be able to see what's going on, so, like, I won't turn the machine off. You know, if a mountain appears where I am right now, or a volcano goes off or something.
Yeah, what they say in The Time Machine.
By the way, the trip would have taken 43 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So the question that we need to answer is, how did he get to San Francisco?
It seems like they're suggesting because his machine is there in the future that it replaces it. But I don't know why. It just doesn't suggest.
Well, the reason he's in San Francisco.
That's where the time machine is in the future on a touring exhibit. So the time machine has to go to where it is?
No, he says something about the time zones. He looks at his watch and goes, 8 hours. Oh, yeah, the time difference.
That just explains the time difference. It doesn't explain how he got to San Francisco.
Well, it's not a coincidence that a ship lands in an H.G. Wells exhibit either.
So do you guys want to hear my theory?
Yes.
So my theory is that he gets into the time machine and it doesn't necessarily disappear, even though it showed that, because this is a hole. This is definitely a hole within the story.
It's a big hole.
But my theory is it doesn't necessarily disappear. And if it's only traveling in time, but if you physically move the machine, like if a big truck came and picked up the machine and then moved it, whatever's happening within the sphere that you cannot see, the time sphere, is still traveling through time, but through space, it's still in real time. And so it got moved around from museum to museum. And when it finally materialized within the separate time sphere back into its body of the time machine, it is in San Francisco.
I like it. That's the best explanation.
That's a perfect explanation. Because that explains why all of his other shit is there too, that they're just moving the whole
exhibit,
his whole house.
Let's go with that.
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay.
So he's in modern day San Francisco.
He's in San Francisco. Woohoo!
Almost 100 years out of his time in a different country. This man's different culture, different country, 100 years off. And in the city, he's got to find one man without being able to use or communicate. I mean, using just his language.
But yeah.
That's quite a task.
They show us when all the gentlemen are standing around, HG and Jack play a game of chess. And Jack beats HG the way he always does. And so the whole point of the movie is that H.G. Wells is going to outsmart Jack the Ripper by knowing what he's thinking. And so he kind of stumbles. He realizes I don't even think he thinks about it at first. Like, oh, I'm going to go to banks and find him. He's just like, well, shit, I need money now. So he goes to a bank to try to get some money. And then he's like, oh, well, this is obviously what Jack would do. So then he basically it's like a fucking Rocky IV montage of him going in and out of banks for 5 minutes.
Yeah, every bank in the city.
Yeah. But there is something really interesting to me about, even though it was slow, you know, the pace of it was slow because it's from the early or the late 70s. It's still really interesting to me to see a character kind of discover all the things in the future and see their reaction and kind of put yourself in that perspective of like, yeah, what would it be like to see a car for the first time, or to see
a plane.
Yeah. Or to see a lady walking around in a tube top with no bra on, you know, like what would that be like?
Oh, she's got clear pants. She's got Doc Brown pants on.
So yeah, I find that really fun and interesting, like when someone from the past is going into the future. So that was fun for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at one of these banks, he meets a lady introducing to us the love interest. Her name is Amy, and she is smitten for him.
I don't know. I just, throughout this entire movie, it portrays that if you are a male in San Francisco in 1979, women are just going to throw, you just get digits just by standing there, just by breathing.
I know.
For both of them, they get dates like pretty easily.
Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and they kind of set that up like, you know, we're still in the, like they set it up very much like it's still like the hippie love generation and everyone's just free loving all the time. I think 79 might be a little late for that idea.
That's the disco generation.
The
free love with cocaine.
I like that he's kind of figuring it out. He first looks at the paper and it says Colts Mall Rams as a football headline, and he's like, he has a moment of like, huh?
Yeah.
maybe this isn't utopia.
Oh yeah, the constipation commercial that he sees.
Yeah.
Welcome to utopia.
So he exchanges his money, he meets this lady, and through her he finds out, after the bank montage, right after going through all the banks, he finds out that John, Jack the Ripper, was at this bank, exchanged his money, and is staying at a hotel nearby. And so he goes to the hotel and somehow finds the name or the number of room, the room that he's in, and he confronts Jack the Ripper. And it basically, I guess his whole plan was like, hey, I found you. Now you're coming back to the past with me.
He didn't think there'd be any violence. He thought he would just willingly like go and he would have a nice gentleman conversation about it. And that's not how it turns out.
No. So they get separated again, and
after they had a fight, they have a little
scuffle, a little gentleman scuffle,
and he's only saved by the fact that the maid interrupted them.
Yeah, is that when the run starts across town too?
Yes,
that is it. After the maid comes and then they end up chasing each other.
Yes,
throughout the city,
the slowest. Oh my god, it's like two old men just walking.
He's at one bridge, the other guy's at the other bridge, and they run over, and now he's at the elevator and he's at the escalator.
But I mean, really showing off the city, San Francisco and all of its 1979 glory.
So before we get too far away from it, so yeah, I just wanted to check and make sure. So yeah, he looks at he's trying to figure out where the hell he is, because he realizes he's not in London like he expected. And he finally realizes he's in San Francisco, and he goes, of course, 8 hours difference.
Right, because his watch was off. Because his watch was set for...
Oh, that's just his watch.
This is that moment.
God.
Every episode, there's a moment. There's one thing that Desmond was like, oh, that's what that was.
But I thought that was the whole... I think Ari came up with a great reason why his time machine is there. But I was still trying to let loose of my initial idea that the machine hovered while the Earth rotated. And then whenever it stopped, the machine just sat down in that place. But no, he's just trying to set his fucking watch.
at least you're pretty.
I want to name these moments, whatever they are. Every episode, there's one moment.
Come on. Yeah, figure it out. Call it. Well, I'll get a stinger. I'll put in a little like, Desmond gets it.
Desmond's realization.
Yeah, like a light bulb turning on. Well, he chases the guy, and the guy gets hit by the car, right?
Right.
And then he goes to the hospital.
And then someone tells him that some guy died who was hit by a car. John Doe has died.
Yeah.
So then he's like, oh, I guess the guy's dead. Then he goes on a date with the lady, and they have a date, and it ends well.
She is just giving him the take me home and ravage me eyes from the moment. She kind of comes off like this sweet, like innocent Southern deer, but then is like...
Yeah, but then she's like, she's been alone so long that she's just horned up for anybody. But thank God that this guy is a cool guy on top of it.
Yeah, they have a pretty good date. She's from San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
The date ends well.
She got some sweet 1893 loving.
That suit has to stink.
Yeah,
that's what we said.
He hasn't showered.
He's been wandering. He slept out in the streets, wandering around. He hasn't shown that big, heavy suit.
And people smelled bad back in the day.
Yeah, bringing that London.
Can we also bring up, if I have my own personal award show, I think we might say it was the worst kiss in any time travel film.
If it made any film,
he just opened the full suck face. It's just like super big open mouth.
Yeah, their kiss was bad.
It was pretty bad.
Really?
It was awkward as hell.
It wins worst time travel kiss award.
If not ever.
They don't kiss well in 1893. They don't know how to do that.
She's into it.
She's into anything.
Well, she was excited. She liked that big furry caterpillar on his mouth. That was really calling to her.
So was it too much? So what don't you like about it? Did they just, they went for it too much?
Or? Do you not remember the kiss? Go back and watch it.
I remember. Kiss. Is that where the date ended or the date began?
Began.
It began on the kiss?
Yeah, on the couch. It was just, they were just like.
That was the end of the date.
That was the end. That must have
been. She looks at him and says, if you don't put me in your arms.
Oh God, that's right.
What did she say? If you don't put me in your arms.
I'm going to scream.
I'm going to scream.
Yeah.
They're both like on other sides of the couch. And then he's like, I don't want to compromise you. She says, I'm practically raping you. And he says, oh, okay. Desmond is watching the kiss in real time. Let's hear his reaction.
This is very crucial to the time travel story.
Oh, they pause. Oh, what a sweet little pause. Yeah. That's just a real kiss, man.
No way, man.
Yeah, it is.
Is that how you kiss? I feel bad for Kelly.
That's like open your mouth as wide as you can and try to eat them, but not with your teeth.
It's not that bad. That is a sensual. No, that is just a nice half part. Lots of tongue. It's just lots of tongue, which
I don't even think. I think without the tongue, I think they're just sucking face.
Oh, do you think it's a fake French kiss?
Okay. Can we
do another podcast about makeout scenes in films?
Definitely. I think
can we get back to the time travel, please?
I don't know. She just sent me back in time. I'm getting all tingly like a teenager.
All right. So they wake up after their night of passionate time travel lovemaking.
Fuck yeah.
She's all about it. She's like, you got anywhere to stay? He's like, no, stay here.
Yeah, stay in my pants.
She's into it. So the radio is playing in the morning and the news person on the radio says there has been the second killing of a prostitute, same style as the one the day before, and we don't know who's doing it, and this is the second one. And so that is when H.G. Wells realizes that Jack the Ripper is not dead from his car accident, and he has to go out and find him.
And then...
Yes, and he lets her know some of the truth. He lets her know that, like, he has to find the guy and he's dangerous.
Yeah.
And then he gets a phone call.
The guy, Jack the Ripper's moseyed into her bank to make another deposit.
Which she recognizes him because he had been there already to exchange some money.
And she is not good at trying to not look freaked out. She's like,
Well, she says, yeah, like, I'm glad that the hotel worked out for you. She says the specific name. And that's when he realizes that's how H.G. Wells found him, is because of her.
Yes.
And he essentially threatens her and says, if give H.G. Wells a message for me, tell him he needs to give me the key or else. Right. Because the key is going to allow him to travel anywhere with the machine.
Do you miss the days when a guy could just grab a woman by the wrist and then just drag her around town for half a movie and use her as ransom bait?
And she's not really fighting back. Yeah. And she's just like, oh, I'm helpless.
Well, that's later. That happens later.
Yeah. Well, it starts now. Doesn't he take her now?
No.
He doesn't take her. He just does the threat and he leaves.
He leaves. And then this is the point where he has to tell her the truth. He says, I got to tell you the truth. You know, I'm H.G. Wells and I'm from the past and time travel is real, and she doesn't believe him. So he has to prove it to her by taking her on a little trip to the future. So they break into the museum, they get into the time machine, and they go like two or three days into the future. And it's a blip, right? He's like, it won't be very exciting because it's going to be a blip, the actual travel part. And it was, they showed just like a glitch happening.
Yeah, that'd take the second. We saw that one in real time.
Yeah, because they were only going a couple of days. And so she gets out of the machine and she's like, nothing happened. It's all the same. She moseys over to the counter and there's a newspaper on the counter. And the date is, you know, it's the
Saturday, 3 day. I think they leave on a Thursday.
Yeah.
Show up on a Saturday.
And the headline of the newspaper shows a picture of Amy. And it says she was murdered. She's the fifth victim of Jack the Ripper, and she's been murdered. And
7:30 p.m. Friday night.
7:30 p.m. Yeah. So she's freaking out.
So what do? Do they go way back in time to try to prevent it from happening?
No.
No. They have a time machine. Why would they give themselves time?
So this is a hole for me. So they go back to the same moment that they got into the time machine. And he says something along the lines of, we're too late to prevent number three, the third killing, but we can prevent number four. And then she, of course, is number five. But why couldn't they prevent any of them?
Motherfucker, you have a time machine.
You have a time machine. You know where it
happens, when it happens. That's short-sightedness. H.G. Wells is a great brain. I don't know why you couldn't think of that one, buddy. You could prevent every single one. Every victim he's ever had through history, you can prevent.
He could have gone back to the moment that Jack got... Well, no, because then they'd probably occupy the same space.
Oh, you mean before he stole the thing?
Oh, is that why he couldn't go back? Well, he could have gone back a couple days earlier,
But they didn't say that as a rule, at least.
Yeah.
But we're making up our own rules because of how the time machine got there.
It was pretty vague on time stuff.
So they didn't talk about, when you go into the past and there's two of something. There was never two time machines at the same time. So my guess is the writers were just like, that's too complicated. I don't want to have to deal with two H.G. Wells and two time machines.
There were not a lot of time travel films in 1979.
Yes. And that's an easy thing for audiences to grasp a hold of. Is death is dead.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter when you die, past, future, whatever. But then again, I mean, I guess H.G. Wells couldn't really go forward in time because he's, I don't know.
Before Back to the Future, and there were not that many time travel movies. So we should recognize that this was a pretty big deal. They did not think about all the aspects of it.
Yeah, but totally. They did a great job.
Yeah, they did it. They did it really.
All right, so they come back from the future knowing that she's going to die. They're like talking about ways to take him down, how to protect her. Is that when they go to the hotel?
Well, they try to prevent number four from happening.
Yeah, and that fails.
Oh, well.
They get a flat tire. She changes the tire, just like the badass 70s woman that she is.
Yeah.
She changes the tire while he goes and makes a phone call. I'm going to go make a phone call while you change a tire.
Oh, we didn't talk. I mean, it's going back a little bit. We didn't talk that earlier in the film. He did try to go to the police and he calls himself Sherlock Holmes and he tells a story and they think he's crazy.
Rightfully so.
Yeah. So now he's back. She can't sleep, right? So she takes some sedatives.
She's nervous. She's freaking out. She's supposedly supposed to die at 7:30.
So she's going to die in 5 hours. So she takes a bunch of Xanax and whiskey and just hopes for the best.
And passes out.
Those are probably Quaaludes back then. Those are probably lewds.
No, she said Valium.
Valium, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And she's like, promise me you'll come back. Promise me you'll come back. He promises she'll come back. So she feels fine. Just...
He's almost at the house and a bunch of cops jump out of the bushes.
Well, no, he goes to buy a gun.
Yeah.
He goes to buy a gun because...
Without any identification.
Yeah, from a pawn shop.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the 70s, baby. Rock and roll.
And, you know, they snatch him up and they arrest him and put him in jail, take all his stuff.
Yeah. Now he's like H.G. Wells. Like, oh, yeah, last time you were Sherlock Holmes, now you're H.G. Wells. They take all his stuff, including his glasses, which I thought was... strange.
Yeah, the glasses was a little much.
Yeah,
they took his magic key for the time machine. They took
And so anyway, he's there. She's dead asleep, and finally he's begging the guy, the cop that's interviewing him. So
who
like,
does he
I
call? He does. Who does he call?
The hotel. So before he left, he said, "If I'm not back by
that's
a certain
right.
time, get a room at this hotel.
Yeah,
and stay there." But she passed out, and you know. Didn't work. And so he called the hotel thinking she would be there and she wasn't. And that was his only call.
So then
he says, I'll confess to whatever you want. I don't care. Just go save this woman.
Yeah.
We see her in the apartment. We see the door open. We see her hiding in the closet.
Jack the Ripper comes in.
And then next thing you know, the cops believe him. They go to the apartment and you just see like a severed hand, blood all over.
That was gnarly.
Yeah. Really realistic looking.
Blood.
Pink blood.
It was like orange.
Yeah. Pink is orange blood. And so the cop just comes back to the, not interested in the case at all, just says, you're free to go. I believe you. Someone did die. Sorry. You can go. I believe everything you said. Now you can go. I'm not going to delve further into this as a case. I'm just going to let you go.
Yeah.
I may have a time traveler in my midst, but here's your last.
You're probably true. There's so much I should ask you, but I just feel bad. So bye-bye. And then he wanders around. Full of grief, Palace of Fine Arts, where one goes.
Yeah, is he just there?
Well, she supposedly lives near there.
So they just saw him.
But yeah, he didn't get called there or anything. He's just wandering around moping and he hears her call to him.
So it turns out that the Amy character had invited a friend over at 7:30.
Yeah.
So the friend from the bank, the coworker from the bank. So when she walks in, that's probably who Jack the Ripper killed and then took Amy as hostage.
To get the key.
To get the key. So now they're in the Palace of Fine Arts. He's got a knife to her throat. He says, give me the key. And then he gives him the key and then he leaves with the key and Amy. Jack the Ripper doesn't come through.
He's not a gentleman.
No.
So the first time... Did the newspaper falsely report her death because it was her apartment?
Yeah, they said they must have gotten it wrong.
Or did they change time?
I think they had suggested they didn't know, although whatever. Anyway, so H.G. gets in a car. I guess her car is nearby in the classic 70s way with the keys in the ignition. The car is unlocked, keys in the ignition, because that's what you do.
Well, they showed it because she was such a wreck. when they show when they got there that that he was consoling her and barely had enough car information to remember to turn it off. And so then, you know, he was, like I said, she was too busy crying. So yeah, plot hole filled in.
You did it. You go to the H.G. Wells exhibit at the museum because homeboy's trying to get in the time machine. And then H.G. tries to stop me like, dude, do what you want with it. Just save, leave the woman alone, which eventually he does, surprisingly.
He like gets away. Like, that was a weird scene because they make it look like she fought her way clear because he's like frustrated that she got away. But she also
I couldn't tell what happened. Is that what happened? He said some weird line like sorry, like he was gonna kill her, but then she got away.
Then he was just like, cool, whatever. I got my time machine anyways.
No, his pocket watch got caught on one of the levers on the outside. He got distracted.
That's what it was.
She slipped away and he just got in the machine.
Like, ah, fuck it.
Yeah, put the key in, and that's when H.G. Wells walked up and pulled out the vaporizing equalizer key from the outside.
And he vaporized.
And he is now going throughout time for infinity with nowhere to go.
Oh my God. That
it is kind of like the Phantom Zone.
It is.
I wonder if you are like, say you're this guy traveling through the time stream, do you still age?
Ooh, good question.
It's the time stream. You could just say he's going to be doing that until he starves to death if you're like trying to go logically. But if you also just say, if he's in the time stream, does time work for him? And is he just for eternity just going through time?
Because there's got to be some level of faster than light travel which reduces your aging to almost nothing, right?
Yeah,
I would think the aging process would be different.
Yeah,
if you can travel at the speed of light or faster than the speed of light, time stops or stands still.
So he does that, and then HG is saying to his lady friend, I gotta go back, I gotta do great things,
I gotta write this book.
Yeah, and she clearly states that like she's not gonna, you know, do anything for a man's job. Her job is equally important.
She's really excited about, I've worked in currency exchange. Okay. I did currency exchange for 2 years. That is not
in real life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love to find out stuff like
that. Is not, it was the best job I ever had. Like I got like a retirement fund. Like I quit one day cause I was pissed. And she called me 2 weeks later. She's like, you gonna get your check? I'm like, I quit. She's like, well, you worked up some vacation money and it's yours. So I was like, all right, best job ever. But it is not, it's not a reason to not travel through time. I wouldn't be like, no, this is what I do.
But then she realized that she loved him. And so she got in the machine and went back with him.
She did.
Because it's all about love.
It's always love. Always fucking love.
Love and gravity. And then the fun little cherry on top of the cake pie is that you find out that his H.G. Wells's real wife was named Amy.
Yeah. Yeah. That was really cool.
That's fun. That's the historical fiction part of it.
So you have it in a nutshell.
Nutshell.
I did some research and it was interesting. They said that Malcolm tried to research. Yeah. McDowell tried to research. I listened to like tape recordings of H.G. Wells and stuff so he could mimic his voice. But he said H.G. Wells' voice was so high pitched and squealy that if he had done an accurate portrayal, it would seem comical. So he decided to go for a more educated British tone.
That's really it still is crazy to me that there's audio recordings from 1895. But on that note, I'll say this. I would like a Big Mac and French fries. Oh, and an iced tea, palm frites. French fries are palm frites.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said he had a high-pitched, squeaky voice. It was a 78 RPM recording of Wells. The studio originally wanted Mick Jagger for the role of John Leslie Stevenson. That would have been a different...
Wow.
Free Jack, baby.
And this is the first film. It looks like McDowell did this. He's trying to do something different after Caligula. So he signed up. He's trying to sign with less sex and violence.
That's funny.
You know, because
every movie is different than Caligula.
It's this film that Malcolm McDowell made about like Rome and like the orgies and stuff back then in the late 70s. And they have all like Playboy playmates and stuff. And there's ejaculation, there's visual, it's porn.
It's like,
but he's in it. It's like a Hollywood film that was also, they're just trying to create realism to like the hedonism of ancient Rome. It's like an unrated 70s film. Anyway, he wanted to change his it, try something different. That's what he laughed. It's like every movie is different. Like even porn is different than Caligula.
Totally, yeah. Just do some straight porn.
Wow.
And this this director too. Well, first of all, he directed a pilot episode for Time After Time in 2017. So, we'll have to figure out where that is.
Meaning a TV show?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's based off a novel that was unfinished at the time?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Speculates what might have happened if H.G. Wells built a real-time machine to travel the 70s and turn to Jack the Ripper. All right. It was written in 1979, and the film also came out in 79. So, yeah, it was unfinished. He was still writing the book, and someone was like, that's great.
Let's make a movie.
A short-lived television series adaptation aired in 2017. Oh, wow.
It's an interesting concept, you know, for history buffs, you know, like take something that's unsolved back in history and, you know, solve it with fiction.
Yeah, it was a really good historical fiction because they didn't change so much that it's just like, well, why not just make a fictional movie? And, it, you know, but it wasn't, you know, so locked into realism.
I like that, you know, we always talk about the tropes of the time travel film, right? There's like the, like Ari was saying, there's the science moment, there's how it works. There's like the lesson learned, how you can't fuck with time. But I like the stranger out of their time period trying to acclimate to a different, whether that's Marty McFly in the 50s of like,
yeah, the password,
or coming back, or the tab, or the you want a Pepsi free, or whatever. Being lost in a place where you don't know how anything works, that experience is pretty unique to time travel films.
Yeah.
And it's always fun.
Was he excited or disappointed at the exchange rate?
Disappointed. Originally, with the bank, I think with the 10,000 or the 4,000, he was just glad to get money.
Because with inflation in general, even at a bad exchange rate, wouldn't it still seem like a lot of money?
Right. How does he even reference what $25 does? Right. He should have been excited.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Thankfully, the guy rightfully sends him to a collector, though. And he's like, you can get way more of these. But then he doesn't have an ID to give to the pawn shop. But then, yeah. He doesn't have an ID to sell his coin collection, but he also doesn't have an ID to buy a fucking gun.
That's what he said.
I remember you said that and I was like, oh, whatever. But yeah, the fact that some guy wouldn't give him a couple $100.
I would buy it if he was buying it like in the street, in like an alley, like a back an alley deal. But
he probably just found some pawn shop. Not porn shop.
I found a porn shop. That was
a pawn shop. Caligula. That he was willing to take his money.
You can get a gun at a porn shop.
By the way, his first experience when he time travels here and he makes it, his first experience is being bombarded by a bunch of Hare Krishnas. I thought he would have been like, oh, this is it. Socialism and money is God. And I thought he would have just went off with them and been very happy, probably. Except the religion aspect.
Yeah. So Henry out there, I know you're listening to this. Thank you for the suggestion.
Thank you very much. Good call. And you know what this is going to do? This is, as far as I'm concerned, this is a double recommendation because I don't think we'll do it next. But we have to put the old time machine on our sooner than later list. Ari and I did.
Oh, the classic one, the old one?
Yeah.
60s or is it 50s?
No, we did the time machine, the recent one.
Right. With, he's saying we got to do the other one.
With what's his face?
Yeah, we did 2002 with Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce, right. Yeah.
So he's saying we got to do the original.
We need to do 1960.
It is 1960.
Oh, okay.
1960 with Rod Taylor.
1960? Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. I'll do my best.
He looks like every 60s actor.
He does. He looks like the 60s.
The one thing I really love about the Time Machine book and movies is that they go into the future and they just keep going into the future. And that to me is one of my favorites. So I'm all for it.
Yeah. And that's what I'm wondering how they do that in the old one. Because in the new one, it was tough to pull off. It made for an interesting story, but in 1960s graphics, it's going to be pretty crazy.
I was so happy with the disco scene.
Really?
I was like, oh, this is the best. Let's do more of this.
Yeah. What did you, Scott, you've lived, I think so. I don't think Ari's lived here longer than you. Like you've lived in San Francisco probably longer than all of us or in the Bay Area. Did you notice, I don't know, any specific, like have you actually like been to any of the places, like into any of those like hotels or clubs or
I couldn't tell what club that was, but at almost every location I think in the movie I'd been to.
Yeah, same with me.
Yeah.
Okay.
That hotel, yeah, she was saying that hotel like looks really futuristic. It was a good choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't spent enough time down there. I'm sure I've walked on a couple of the streets they were on, but I haven't spent enough time there to recognize it.
You know, Palace of Fine Arts, the bridge, the Top of the Mark restaurant. Yeah,
Chrissy Field.
Yeah.
They were on Market Street.
One Market, yeah, and then on Market.
Yeah, North San Francisco, I did recognize that, but when they were in
North Beach. Oh, yeah, we were like, it's funny to see the stores that are still there. My yeah. Garden of Eden is still going in North Beach.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a
and they went over the bridge to the Redwoods like everyone uh-huh. does.
Aaron Muir, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, it's a tourist movie for San Francisco.
Yeah.
It is. Hey, everyone, San Francisco's not too bad. You should come check it out. And while you're there, cross the bridge, come over to the East Bay, get Oaklandish. You know how we do.
Take home a 100-year-old Englishman.
Yes. Oh, get your own Englishman. I love it.
Smelly Englishman. He never showered once in that film. He probably really stinks by the
end. Oh, he definitely didn't get that. It doesn't matter if he showered. If he didn't dry clean that suit, it's just a straight hot mess.
That's what free love really means. It means you're willing to accept somebody even with huge body stink. That's free love.
So would you guys use it?
Yeah. I would have pulled an H.G. Wells and I would have been scared to use it until it boomeranged back. And then, well, and that's something they don't address either. Like it starts falling apart on his H.G. Wells' trip. Like,
it's
second.
The screws start coming out and the steam is coming up from the mechanics. Yeah.
But it's funny, in the future, they said, this thing never worked. It's because they didn't have the key. He had the key. But yeah, I mean, this seems like a time travel situation with minimal consequences.
But yeah, I think once it's been tested and I know it works, I'd use the fuck out of this time machine.
Would you go forward or back?
I'd go forward.
You go forward? How far?
Mm.
How far forward would you go?
Nice round 2050.
Yeah.
I think.
You go to 2050?
I don't think I'd go out. Well, but maybe
if you go too far, it's like it'll be that much harder to like walk around and work within that what's set up.
Am I coming back for sure?
Not for sure.
You could get out of your time machine and get shot by an arrow. You don't know.
Well, what I'm thinking is that, like, I guess if I only have one shot to time travel and I'm coming home, I should probably just for once go outside of my timeline, like what I'll live through.
Yeah.
So like maybe go to 2300. Oh, what fucking year is this? 2100. Not crazy far. I wouldn't go to 3000, but get just outside of my lifeline for a minute and then come back and live in this dumb world. Boring, non-futuristic.
The world might be dumber then. You might be walking in a pile of skulls and radiation in the air.
Or it might be underwater.
Uh-huh. It might be dinosaurs on the earth again. Look at that. We're really positive and optimistic.
Oh, humans are the worst. But you know what? Love is going to get us through. Love and gravity is going to get us through every goddamn time. Well, first of all, thank you for listening to Time Pop. If you have any questions or comments or movie recommendations, send an email to timepoppod@gmail.com. That is timepoppod@gmail.com. I'm going to try to start doing more social media stuff. I've never been a TikToker, but I feel like, did I say that wrong? Am I already outing myself?
No, I think we both, Ari and I just both pictured you like lip syncing to like Taylor Swift songs to try to get people to see Time Pop, and that seemed very funny.
Well, because with the way you do the videos, it seems like a really easy way to make time travel-ish videos. Like I can jump all over the place and make my phone time travel, so it feels like an okay place. So I'm at TimePopPod, time_pop_pod_ on TikTok. Check out my two tester videos that are on there now, just so I can figure out how to use the dumb app, but I'll be doing that. If you are into podcasts, we have go to whatsoundsawesome.com. That is whatsoundsawesome.com. And I have other podcast properties there. We have Wizard Women. We have Awesome Women. We have Dudes Getting Ripped and Healthy. And we have Idiots Talking About the Wheel of Time. It's a great place. You should come check it out.
Have you worked in marketing?
Wait a second.
Obviously. I think you should call your podcast Idiots Talking About Wheel of Time. I think that's a great title.
All the answers, thank the light, be brave, truth not trends, and Time Pop, baby. : the Time Travel Movie Podcast. Do it. WhatSoundsAwesome.com. And that has been our episode for today. I have been Desmond McNeese.
I have been Ariel Galal.
And I'm still currently Scott Lifton.
Bye-bye now.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
That's...
Where is you?
That's bad.
Why is that bad?
Huh? I guess not.
Weird.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.